So secretly we were all watchful of this romance between my older sister and her lover from Odessa.
Mm-hmm.
And we would whisper as, Lieber, did you hear anything from Lova? And is Lova coming to town? And it was a big thing. And here, Lova had to remain behind and she meets this man. And it was a sad and happy experience. It was good that she had somebody to look after her that was healthier and so attentive. But on the other hand, she was all her life dreaming about her lover from the gymnasium.
Every person in your family seems to have something you remember them for the most. Who do you think you were in the family? What were you known for?
I was a very beautiful little child.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before we left. I remember very distinctly walking and missing the pools of mud and dirt, and people were admiring me. And when my mother would dress me up, I was a redhead, a very fiery, sharp redhead with a lot of little freckles and rosy cheeks and very puffy, because we have some pictures which indicate that. And being the baby, everybody cuddled me and kissed me and hugged me, and I seemed to thrive on it. So consequently, I remember myself as being the smart little beautiful child, that's about a cute little baby. Now my brother next to me was similar, like me, very handsome, very nice. But we experienced some very bad times during the pogroms, which affected my brother and my older sisters and my oldest brother. We had a terrible disease of the cholera that hit our town. And my older sister got sick with the cholera. And during one of those very terrible things that I'll never forget, it's a horrible kind of pain, the diarrhea and high fever, a pogrom took place. And one of the pogrom makers on horseback was trying to get into our house through one of the windows. I see this very clearly. And it was my brother, who was only 2 years older than I don't remember where my oldest brother was, who grabbed my sister and somehow saved her life from this pogrom maker. Now that must have affected his thinking for some time. It must have had a very serious effect upon him, because later on when we came to Chicago, we both were studying and went to school. And he, after a certain age, refused to go to school, and it seemed like there was not much more development after the age of about 15, 16, kind of stopped at that level. And I think these pogroms, which he understood, which I didn't, I was just too young, and I was the youngest, so I was always protected by somebody, I think must have had an effect upon his growth. Now, my little sister, of course, being already, she's 6 years older than I, so when I was 11, she was 17, she fell in love with one of my cousins who was in the Red Army. And that's how she developed respect for communism, for the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
She denies having been in love with him, but we all remembered the name and everything, and when he would come through with his regiment or with his troop, whatever it was, how she would prepare to meet him on the street and welcome the Red Army. These things were going and coming, because that's the nature of that war and so on. So I would say that, in a way, she probably had a very happy life, because she had already embraced a philosophy at that age.
So it was your middle sister?
Middle sister. And considered herself a rebel and a red, and didn't want to come to the United States. She wanted to stay behind. But we all had to go. There was some kind of a ruling at that time that anybody missing in the family would create a situation whereby the rest of the family could not proceed. It might have been just a story, or it might have been a reality. But she was convinced that in order to get us all into the United States, she has to come with us, so she went. And immediately upon arrival, she hooked up with a young communist league in Chicago, and she's been one ever since.
Did you arrive at Ellis Island?
We arrived in Ellis Island, and then New York City, and then we took a train to Chicago, and that's where we settled.
What was your experience at Ellis Island? Do you remember that?
Not bad, no. We were just going through, because we already had papers cleared, and everything was prepared. And the organization, all I remember is the initials, HAYAS, H-A-A-S. I forgot, this is its acronym, I forgot what they were represented, but it was a relief organization. They had things arranged. We didn't have any complications of any kind. We just went through the...
Did you retain your original last name in the UK? I mean, was your name changed at all?
No, names weren't changed, but ages were changed. I'm plagued by this problem. To this day, I don't know whether I'm 2 years younger or 2 years older than Angela. because we have no records of when you were born. You would, you know, trace it to certainly the rising of the moon or the setting of the sun or something. But there was no school records of synagogue records or anything like that. But no, the names were all the same as we were. We were the Shapiro family. And we remained that, and to this day I write under my maiden name, married name, Shapiro.
Do you remember your first impressions of the United States?
Oh, indeed. That was the big event. That's for 1929. By 1929, I was already in and out of jail, leading all kinds of struggles. Active in unions, but that I thought you wanted to make as a separate episode.
Well, when you first came when you were 12, I'm talking about your first impressions when you first arrived when you were just 12 or 13.
Well, I felt very keenly, as the story there reveals.
Mm-hmm.
I felt very keenly the strangeness of the country, the language, the people. I missed my forest and the field and the river. And I was of a very boisterous type of a nature. I was athletic. I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to learn English. I just got me through with trying to understand Polish and German. I practically knew Ukrainian thoroughly, and I knew Russian, and of course Yiddish. So there, at the age of 12, I'm already a master of 5 languages.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to get into the English. I was rebellious. I felt a stranger here because our landlord was a Polish family. And they insisted that I should speak English, and I refused. I wanted to speak Polish instead because I resisted that. And I came too late for the school semester. We came here in June, so the whole summer I had to skip from playing on the street. By the time I got into school, I was full of loneliness for Europe. I was full of loneliness for my lost childhood, which is what it really was, because the only memories I could have, you forget the bad, you forget the pogroms in the eye, the older people remember. But I could only remember my many hours at the lake and in the forest and playing with the kids and so on. So I would say when we arrived and when I started going to school, it was a very, very sad time for me. In fact, I began to write poetry at that age, and I wrote a book full of Yiddish poems, which a famous Jewish poetess who was interested in my oldest brother read, and she thought that I had the makings of a good poet. But that damn thing got washed out in the flood we had in the basement where we lived. And
you lived in the basement?
No, we had a bureau there, a chest of drawer there, and we stuck some things in there, and they got washed out. The basement was flooded. No, we lived on the first floor. And so that book of poetry was lost.
What kind of a place, apartment was this?
It was not bad, because of my mother, my older sister, and my middle sister, and me. We were able to build up, make our home quite livable. We were always essentially very clean people, despite the fact that we didn't have the sanitary accommodations and all that. We had an average cold flat apartment. There was no heat, so you buy a little heater and we had a stove in the kitchen.
What kind of stove?
One of those old-fashioned. No, I mean a stove for cooking, and then we had a stove in the living room, yes.
Was it a gas stove?
I think it was. Either gas. Yes, it must have been gas, because shortly after that they introduced electricity, and we got electricity about a year or two later into our home. So I think it was those jets, gas jets, you know. I would say our life was not bad in Chicago when we arrived, because my oldest sister, my oldest brother, and my middle sister went to work.
What did they do?
And I and my younger brother went to school, and my mother stayed home and became the homemaker. Now, my older sister was working as a millinery worker, making hats, but because she was so beautiful, they used much of her time modeling those hats. When buyers came by, you know, she would always tell us how she spent much of her time. She was very creative, she was quite artistic. As a matter of fact, in later life, she became a sculptress. And she has some, we have some things here. One of my sisters has her work. And she worked that way, and she went to night school. They all went to night school. Everybody who worked went to night school, learned English. And she eventually became an electrolysist, one who removes excessive hair on the skin of men or women. She was very apt at it, very good, because right after she married a Jewish school teacher who didn't make much. She was connected with the Arbiterim, and they weren't paying. They were also a poor organization. So she became an electrolysist and helped to educate their one and only son, who is now very one of the wealthiest young men in Beverly Hills. And my other brother went to work in the men's clothing industry as a cutter. He knew as much about cutting. He was very clumsy. He was not at all adapted to that kind. He was the scholar. He was the, you know, the intellect. He was the one who was mastered languages and all that. So he didn't stay very long in that profession, that line of work. He all went to night school, and then later I think we all helped them go to day school. By all, it means, you know, we didn't put too much strain on our parents for our needs. It required some sacrifice. And he was studying. He was teaching languages for a couple of years, made some money, and then he entered medical school and became a real people's doctor who worked in the ghetto. And when he died, he was not a rich man. He fairly comfortable, but whereas others became rich with real estate and other things, he was just a good people's doctor. My middle sister also worked in the Amalgamated Clothing Workers as something or other. I forgot what she did. But she immediately hooked up with the Young Communist League, and shortly after that, she met a very handsome, brilliant young organizer of the Young Communist League. And they got married, and she too began to travel with him throughout the country, helping to organize.
Was joining the Communist Youth League, the Communist Party, was that something that you kids had to hide from your parents, or could you be perfectly open about it?
Well, in our family, it was so different, I think, from others. My father, although Orthodox, was so tolerant. He was really the closest thing to what I would now call is developing as Eurocommunism, tolerance to other people's views. And he felt that whatever his children would do would be done for the benefit of humanity. And even though he disagreed, they would hide us from the police. And that, I mean, you know, we would tell them we had to go away, we wouldn't be around. Or later on, I was sent abroad to study, and they wanted to know where we were, and they didn't reveal where I was. And they had great respect
for me and my sister, she and I were the only ones who joined the communist movement. The others did not. The other three did not. My older sister didn't join any political movement. My brother was too busy becoming a doctor. And my little sister and my other brother, my brother next in line, was, we went to work. He had streaks of brilliance. He became a champion chess player. He memorized the Shakespeare's works and was able to recite them forward and backward. And yet he showed, in my opinion, the signs of retardation in other respects. He developed certain ways about him of bashfulness and the presence of women and girls, and generally did not develop at all levels evenly.
How did you learn about the facts of life, about sex, about menstruation?
I personally. I learned when I was a kid and I saw my sisters washing bloody rags. And it is possible I asked one of my girlfriends. I wouldn't dare ask my sisters or mother. So it is possible that in the Ukraine I had a couple of very good girlfriends. One who later moved to Chicago and whom I met was about 2 years older than I. And I think I must have asked her, because that's the only recollection I have of associating sex with something that happened in the family. No one explained sex in any form or fashion. And as I said, when I began to develop breasts and I had to begin to put on a bra because I was an athlete, I was very boyish and athletic, I had to steal one of my sister's bras and try it on for size. And when it fitted, I would put it on under the covers, and then they realized that I was stealing bras or something. And actually, I would say that I was, until I was 25 or 30, I was a real prude. I wouldn't even discuss sex or... we wouldn't mention it in the presence of the family members.
Would you have felt free to kiss a boy when you were a teenager? I mean, is that permissible?
No, that was not permissible. That was not permissible. So that even to my present age, I am backward in that respect. Backward is a poor word. I am very restricted in my outward mannerism and my relation to my husband, with whom we are both very much in love with each other. We've been married 22, going on 22 years. But it's just one of those things that with each passing year we are more attached and more in love and show more respect for each other. And as a result of that, we catch ourselves holding hands in public, or we develop the habit of whenever we come in or leave, we kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And we always feel we ought to do it on the side. We shouldn't see. So that he had a similar background in Italy, so it seems he too was brought up prudishly, you know. And as a matter of fact, in 1933, I was 22 or 23 years of age. It was the first time I ever went with a boyfriend or was kissed by a boyfriend.
You didn't have romantic flirtations when you were a teenager?
If I did, there were a couple of fellows in the Young Communist League on whom I had an eye, or they had an eye on me too, because while I was not the raving beauty that my older sister was, or even my middle sister, I had a certain beautiful features that immediately attracted people, such as fiery red hair and sharp blue eyes. That was a weapon. I had very good teeth also. So I was a rabble rouser, a speaker, an athlete, and all this.
What kind of things did you participate in athletically?
Well, when we went to school, I set up immediately a baseball team, and I was the captain.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing the boy against the boys.
Mm-hmm. And the second junior high school, I remember that very distinctly. And then the schools offered me all kinds of scholarships in that field. I wanted to be a physical ed teacher. And so I participated in all the physical educational activities within the school, you know, climbing rope and jumper, a high jumper, and later, as a matter of fact, in the early 30s, when I went back to the Soviet Union, I even participated in an international race of runners for women. I represented the American group of women runners. So until that time, I was that away.
Were you ever put down for being athletic? Did people tell you you weren't ladylike? Or
very much so. All my life, I was called Virgin Mary. And I was, they would say, don't talk like that in the presence of Ethel. You know, she will blush and she doesn't want to hear anything like that. I was too much involved in my political work. Very early, became immediately, well, that's another story. It happened, I had 3 years of schooling, and that's it.
Did you drop out?
Oh, yeah, I guess you could say so. I finished junior high school, and I made the 9 grades in 3 years because of my age and everybody helping me, and I was pretty good as a student. I applied myself to whatever I was doing pretty seriously. So I skipped from grade to grade and graduated. I was another young boy. We had the highest marks.
You hated it, but you did really well at it?
Yeah, because by nature, I developed the traits of a perfectionist. I had to do everything perfectly well, you know. It is a curse and it's a blessing in many ways. So that later when I became a seamstress, I began to work even for a designer. And I outdid her. She would give me the very expensive garments to work on. She would just me. It was the same thing when I went to school later. Years later, 1947, I went to business college. In the 9 months, I became one of the speediest shorthand writers, so that to this day, I write everything in shorthand. One of the fastest typists to me, 83 words a minute at that time, full-fledged bookkeeper, switchboard up. I learned within the 9 months everything they gave. I applied myself very, very seriously to whatever I undertook. In the 9 months, I had to do it, but that's it. So I did it.
How did you feel the effects of the Depression in Chicago? How did your family?
Well, it's too big a story to go into now. I think we would have to open that as a separate chapter. Oh no, it's only 11. I thought it was 12. Because there is something that preceded the Depression. You cannot speak of the effects of the Depression unless you know of that we had years of prosperity. 1926, 27, 28 were years of prosperity. And we did not suffer. And everybody was telling us this is the new age. I forgot what reference was made to that period. The American...
The new age, that's what it's called.
Was it?
The golden age.
The golden age. The golden age. With Hoover as our president and... Everybody was having a chicken in every pot and a car in every garage. Those were the slogans that were supposed to...
Do you really remember that from that time?
Oh, yeah. Those were the... that was the propaganda of the president and the other propaganda makers of how prosperous we are. There was, as soon as I finished the business college, incidentally, I was studying under Mr. Greig, the founder of the Greig system. So he was... Huh. He had... demonstrate how he reached the, how he happened to invent that system, and it was very helpful in writing perfect outlines all during the years because of, you know, studying under him months. So when I finished, I couldn't, because of my poor English, you know, I couldn't accumulate enough knowledge in English and speed. I was studying to be a court reporter, but I couldn't make it. I was writing about 110 words a minute short, and they needed 130 of that day, that time. So I went to work in offices, and I was always getting good pay, you know, always. The whole thing lasted maybe a year in doing office work, because then I gave my services to the communist movement. So I would say that in 1926 and 27 and 28, we were comfortable. Everybody was. I didn't know about any poverty, either in our family or myself. And then my real hard times began when the Young Communist League began to send me out as an organizer in the environs of Chicago. And I had to go to, before that I went to Kansas City, to St. Louis, to Milwaukee, and a little later, when I came back from Europe, I went to Gary, Indiana. That was in the 36 or so. But in the late 20s, before the crash came in October of 1929. Incidentally, I have a whole novel dealing with that period. It really hit us very hard, because there was no warning. The only ones that warned of the oncoming of an economic crisis were the communists. But who listened in 29 to the communist predictions?
Did you believe the predictions since you were in the
party? We did, but we were preparing the people not economically. We had nothing to offer. We were preparing them politically. Organize yourself, build unions, demand more wages. We're heading for an economic crisis. That was our work. But we personally, individually, were living at $6-$8 a week, you know, getting whatever the party could afford. So when the crash came, we were hit very hard, the whole country, including the people who were working for the communist movement, because the people didn't have money to donate to the movement. Mm-hmm. So even the few dollars we were getting were not always available.
Consequently, we were living on very meager incomes. Was your father in this country by that time?
Everybody was together. Yeah, my father just came about 6 months after we did. In other words, in 22, we were all united.
And he was then began to
be
a cigar maker.
He was a cigar maker. He built his own little factory on the back of our back porch, and he, my mother, and I helped to strip the tobacco, and we rolled cigars for a while until I went away. I called it my father's factory, you know, 100% union, you know, it was a union. I described it in one of my books. I've written two other novels, you see, and that were published, and in them I have a better description. So the Depression took the whole country really off guard. And people had no reserves, no savings, no nothing. There was no social security, no unemployment insurance. The charitable organizations were themselves impoverished. Community outfits, the government bodies said the prosperity is around the corner, this thing will pass, we don't want any gold system like they have in England. And so there was terrific suffering all around. I mean, literally you could see people just sitting on the streets with all their belongings, their furniture, everything, evictions by the thousands, not hundreds, not dozens, but thousands of people being evicted for inability to pay rent.
Was your family evicted?
No, we were very fortunate, because during the Depression, my father and my little brother bought a home before the Depression.
Oh, lucky.
Yes, and it was very cheap, and it wasn't much of a home. But nonetheless, my married sister was able to live upstairs, and the family lived downstairs, and then my little sister got married to this handsome organizer of the Young Communist League, and I was sent out early as an organizer for the Young Communist League, and was on the road all the time. So the house was relatively comfortable and fairly secure, because my father always was able to sell some cigars that he and my mother made.
Mm-hmm.
He bought boxes, he bought the tobacco and all that, bought boxes and rolled them, and found enough customers
And then we had a neighbor who was peddling fruits and vegetables. And because we did him big favors, my father really did him big favors, as was his nature, such as sitting up a whole night during the terrible storm when his horse broke the door of his barn and was ready to run away. My father heard the noise and he came down and he said, God, the rest of the night, to keep the horse inside that barn until the neighbor would wake in the morning to go and peddle his. I mean, this in a way illustrates my enthusiasm for my father. Mm-hmm. Why he was known for doing such things without complaining or grabbing. And so they used to help us with fruits and vegetables, or give us cheaper or whatever was left over. And then my brother next to mine went to work with my father selling newspapers. They bought a stand. And even though it was a cheap penny chiseling business, especially in those days, you'd make a quarter of a cent profit on each paper.
Mm-hmm.
But they would get up at 3 in the morning, come home about 11 in the morning, and those 7-8 hours, they were able to bring enough change so that we were not hungry. But I was home. But my father and mother and my little brother were not hungry during the Depression. See, I was hungry because I was working for the YCL and there were a lot of days we just didn't have any money. And I remember the first time I began to smoke, we picked up a quarter and we had to make the decision, should we buy a package of cigarettes or should we buy a bottle of milk and some donuts? And I decided on the cigarettes so that 20 of us will share.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me my first start as a smoker. There was some satisfaction to the hungry feeling that I had, you know. And I became a chain smoker at that time.
Did you ever go to the movies, or did you ever go out to see?
Yes.
What did you do with your leisure time when you weren't working or reading or organizing?
Well, I must say that I had quite a good childhood in Chicago, despite everything I told you. I had 3 years of study. And every Saturday afternoon, I would go to the Biltmore Theater on Division Street near Roby with my other brother.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the big high point of the week, you know. And on occasion, one of my girlfriends with whom I studied in the Sagan Junior High or in the Wicker Park School, I would tell me, there's another movie, would you want to go? The movies was what, a nickel a dime, so somebody made could go. Again, especially, we live near Humboldt Park, about 8 blocks away from Humboldt Park, which was at that time a very beautiful park in Chicago. And we would go ice skating there, and roller skating at home. And until I joined the Young Communist League, but even then, we would go on hikes into the woods and take along our food and have outdoor outings that were very inspiring, because in addition to being outdoors and walking and all that, we would have lectures and we would sing communal songs and
all that.
So I would say until I was about 16 years of age, I had a very good life.
Who were your favorites, the movies? Did you have any particular ones you really loved to see?
I did at that time, yes. I remember I was following the serial in the movies, and I'll be damned if I can remember what it was all about, but no one could take me away from that Saturday afternoon serial. At the moment, I don't know, but in one of my books I mentioned a whole number of actors and actresses of that period. I don't know if it's about invited to you or from...
Oh, that's okay.
That's from later memory.
Mm-hmm.
From the memory of in Chicago. See, bear in mind, my father was working as a cigar maker. My mother was keeping a very nice home. My older sister wasn't married yet. She married in 27. So we had from 22 to 27, you see. And my middle sister wasn't married either. My oldest brother was working. Everybody was working. There was a little bit of money. While we didn't have ambitions to buy a home or anything, we had enough to get clothes and all that. So we the youngest, my brother and I,
we had a childhood. We had our adolescence.
We were growing up,
except for the language problem.
And I rebelled against it in so many ways that to this day, I retain an accent almost deliberately. I refused to become fully integrated.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept reading Yiddish and reading Polish papers or anything to avoid getting into this American way of life.
What was the decision that made you finally join the YCL? Was it your sister? Or
it was essentially my sister. I had very poor understanding of the whole mechanics or politics of the movement. Being that we were such a close family, and having had that background where she, I, and my little brother were left behind in Europe, and you know that drove us together still more, mm-hmm. there was great respect for each other. And when she joined, she would invite me to come along to some lectures, and they appealed to me. They were rebellious kind of speeches. They were great devotion, dedications to the new socialist country that came into being, the Soviet Union, which we learned later what it did, what it accomplished. We didn't, when we were in Russia, we couldn't. Obviously, we were still at civil war and invasions and all, but later we were part of the, I was part of that group that enthusiastically welcomed the development of the Soviet Union. That had a tremendous influence. And then I had inclinations towards theory a little later. I would read. I broke away more or less from going to movies and didn't have boyfriends, didn't look for boyfriends, and began to read extensively. And to me, the communist philosophy appealed seriously. And so when my sister invited me to go and actually meet some of the writers of these booklets, pamphlets, and so on, or the big lecturers that were well-known in the country, I went along, and it was not difficult for me to become merged with the young communist league. There were young people my age, a lot of them foreign-born, a lot of them also my peers in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was comfortable with the young communists.
Did it start to become like a family for you since you were living and traveling with the communists?
Not for a while. There were moments when it was so. Years later, I remember when I returned to Gary, that was my family. I had to eat in the cooperative restaurant. I had no other money. So the cooperative restaurant was owned or dominated by the communist movement.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have my meals there, and the woman with whom I lived, who gave me a free room, or I think she charged me $3 a month or something like that. So the people from the movement became my close friends and so on. Can we shut it off for a minute so I can?
Sure.
Okay.
How many years were you being paid as an organizer for the Communist Party?
Well, whether I was paid or not really was not very material, but I know I had a total of something like 22 years of commitment to full-time work for the Communist Movement.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I had figured it out. Now, sometimes I would get paid, other times I would go to my older sister and get my meals, another time I would ask my brother to give me some money to, you know, it didn't matter. This was not a decisive factor.
I guess what I'm asking is, did you have an outside job, a straight job?
I worked, during these 22 years, I worked a couple of years as a secretary. I became a very highly skilled needle trades worker.
That's
right. I spent 10 years doing that. But still, because I went into that industry really with the agreement or by assignment of the Communist Party, who wanted me to go into these alley shops, these unorganized shops, and help bring trade unionism into these places. And only if you're skilled and if you know how to do your work will the people show respect for you in any trade, in any profession. And so I spent 10 years in that trade. And then a few years, just before I so-called retired to do full-time writing of my fiction, I worked as a troubleshooter in some of the unions. I became a very highly skilled stenographer, secretary, and bookkeeper and all that. And when a union was in trouble, a girl got sick and had to go away or went away on vacation. So we have a local union here, Local 30 of the United Office of Professional Workers, and they would send me out to these places. I would get the top pay, to get good pay, but I would have to immediately know exactly where to pick up where she left off, the mimeograph, the stencils, prepare the minutes, arrange for the dues, and get the stenographic work completed and all that. I worked like that for a couple of years, but it wasn't full time, you see, because like if in one day I can make $45 at that time, you know, which I did a few times, taking down the notes during the negotiation and so on, I worked part time, and the rest of the time I would either write or do my communist work.
When you first joined the League in 27, 28?
No, it was sooner than that, I think. I attended meetings.
Well, the mid-20s then.
Mm-hmm.
And then you decided to become a full-time organizer. What was the big priority then? What did you find yourself speaking or organizing about most of the time?
Well, we had a combination of problems. For instance, I was located in Chicago. Chicago was the center of several states for communist organization. We had Wisconsin, Missouri, Kansas, Illinois, and Indiana. See? So the people we had were sent out to these areas to help bring together what contacts we had to set up organization of the Young Communist League or of the Communist Party. And that was our priority. Wherever we went, we looked up these few people and we tried to build an organization. Because we were very young in this country, the Communist Party was born in 1919 and established itself really as a Communist Party about 1921 or 22. So in the mid-20s, about 3-4 years later, there wasn't yet a fully solidified organization. So a lot of our effort went into the organizational aspect of the work. For instance, I remember the first time I went out to Milwaukee, I was turned over a couple of names, and I was told, after you get there, and I was hitchhiking, as we all were at that time, mm-hmm. With these two names, see if you can set up a Young Communist League. And in the course of about 3, 4, 5 months, I set up a branch of the Young Communist League. Now, what did we do besides setting up the branch? Well, we would have classes. We helped organize the Queen Anne Candy Company of Hammond, Indiana. We helped to get together a few young people who were working in the steel mills of the Indiana community. And we would do that kind of work.
What was people's reaction to unions, and what were the problems of union organizing then compared to